Mark 3:27, we're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 12, if you want to open your Bibles there. 1 Kings chapter 12, glad you're here. Have some visions with us, certainly glad you've come to study with us. Invite you to come back anytime that you might have. 1 Kings chapter 12 is where we're going to begin. You think back through history, some of the greatest leaders, people that go down in history as being leaders. Most of the time, those great leaders that have stood the test of time, it's because they got through something significant. They're respected because they handled some form of conflict well, whether that was a war or some external thing or some internal thing. But great leaders who go down in history, it wouldn't have been because things were smooth. That it was because of how they handled things that kind of elevated them in people's mind and through history's eyes. Think back to Washington, the things that he would have, that early period of the country and the revolutionary period. Think about Lincoln. Think about both President Roosevelt and Winston Churchill, those two men, the things that they did, the respect that people give them because of the things they did to lead during World War II. And now think about the kind of leader that Rehoboam could have been. What a leader he was. The opportunities that he had. He had a chance to rise. But because of his lack of judgment, he divided a kingdom. Changed the narrative of God's people. I want us to go back to the day that would have been his coronation. Go back to 1 Kings chapter 12. That's where we're going to begin. We're about 975 BC or so. Solomon has died. And now Rehoboam, his son, day of coronation, he's about to become king himself. And as you well know, I want us to read this together, but you remember what happened. The people came to him with a request. And starting in verse 4, here's what they ask him. Your father, talking about Solomon, he made our yoke very grievous. Now therefore, make thou the grievous service of your father and the heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve you. Just cut us some slack. Give us a little bit of a break. Your dad, this past Wednesday night, remember literally making the statement about how Samuel, when people went to him for a king, he said, oh, you want a king? Here's what your king's going to do. They're going to tax you. They're going to tax you harshly. You're going to work in your fields, and the food you grow is going to go to him and his household. He's going to draft your sons, and he's going to take your daughters, and he's going to put them to work. Well, that happened. And now at Solomon's death, they come to Rehoboam and they say, just make it a little easier on us. We'll serve you and we'll serve you well. But we need some help. Verse 5. He said to them, depart from me for 3 days and then come back. And so the people departed. Let me have some time to think about it. Come back in 3 days, I'll give you my answer. King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon, his father, when he had lived. And he said, how should I answer the people? What is your advice? So he gets the leadership council somewhat. He gets the ones that Solomon had. What do you think? What's your suggestion? And they spoke to him in verse 7. And they said, if you will serve the people this day, if you'll be a servant to them and answer them and speak good words to them, they'll be your servants forever. What do you think I should do? I think you need to do what they've asked you. It's not a ridiculous request. And if you'll just bow to this, if you'll serve them in this way, they'll love you and they'll do whatever you ask of them. Verse 8, he forsook their counsel of the old men that they had given him. He consulted with the young men that grew up with him and who stood before him. And he said to them, what counsel do you have? And they said, verse 10, the young men that grew up with him said, this is what you'll speak to the people. Your father made our yoke heavy. We want you to make it lighter to us. This is what you'll say. My little finger will be thicker than my father's loins. And if my father put you under a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, I'll chastise you with scorpions. What do you think I should do? I think you need to show them how tough you are. I think you need to show them how big a man you are. You need to tell them, if you think my dad was tough, well, you wait till you get a load of me. You think my dad was a strong man. You ain't seen nothing yet. My finger will be thicker than his midsection. You think those whips was bad? I've got scorpions waiting for you. I'm a man, and I'm a big man, and you just wait. In verse 14, he spoke after the counsel of the young men. When they came back, that's exactly what he told them. And in verse 16, when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, what portion do we have in David? Neither do we have inheritance with the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. That's a paraphrase for see you later. To your tents, we would say, we're out of here. And I guess to use a present phrase that the teenagers would say, they just dropped the mic on him. We're gone. Rehoboam had a chance to stand up. Rehoboam had a chance to lead all United Israel, and they're ready to be led. And what we're going to do today is look at a character study of him. What can we see about him from this event? We haven't done a character study in a while, but there's a lot about what Rehoboam does here. And actually, in many ways, it's what he didn't do. But there's a lot we can learn about this. And let's look at his character. First of all, he failed to seek God's counsel in any of this. That should have been his starting point. Did you catch him? Verse 6? He goes to the old men. What's your advice? In verse 9, he went to the younger men that he grew up with. What's your counsel? He's asking everybody except God. He's asking everybody except his king. And don't think that there wasn't options. Look back into chapter 11. We're not going to do any reading here. I just want to just highlight something for us real quickly. Go back to chapter 11, just prior to this event. Jeroboam, as you well know, the one who's going to take the northern kingdom. Jeroboam was approached by somebody while he was out in the fields one day. Look in verse 29 of chapter 11. It came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem, that the prophet Ahijah, the Shalamite, found him. A prophet of God shows up to Jeremiah. And remember, he started ripping the garments and he handed them 10. You've got a prophet of God. Look at chapter 14. Because what we would like to think is, we want to give Rehoboam the benefit of the doubt. And we think, well, maybe Ahijah died. But he didn't. He was alive through all of this stuff. In chapter 14, Jeroboam, king of the north, has a sick child. And in verse 4, Jeroboam sends his wife to the house of Ahijah. Ahijah was still alive when all this happened. And so here back in chapter 12, if you go back to where we were, Rehoboam is asking all generations, what should I do? But we don't see him going to the Urim and the Thummim. We don't see him going to the prophet Ahijah who could have spoken for God. The place that he should have started at never even crosses his mind. He failed to seek God's counsel. Once getting counsel from other sources, he chose inferior counsel. He went with what we would call his peers. They were a little bit more impressive to him. They told him what he wanted to hear. And don't make no mistake about that. That was what this whole 3 days was about. The request that Rehoboam was asked, make the burden light on us. That's not what he wanted. If that had been reasonable to him, he would never have said, give me 3 days to think. If Rehoboam had been, if that had been where he was leaning, Has anybody ever come up to you and they ask you for something, and as soon as it's said, sure, I'll do that? Why wasn't that his answer? Because it's really not what he wanted. And so then he starts hunting around for others. And what do you think I should do? I think you should do it. Why didn't he say, that's a, okay, I was just kind of getting some confirmation. That's what I'll do. Why didn't you do that? Because deep down, it's not what he wanted. What you've got here is a living, breathing example of somebody who keeps looking and keeps hunting until they hear exactly what they want to hear. You ever done that? You ever just got on Facebook, start texting and emailing and calling and talking, and you just hunt out somebody who will tell you you're right. We ever done that? Have I ever done that? It happens. Ask long enough and you're going to find somebody who's going to tell you what you really want to hear to begin with. And so here he is, never asking God the first thing. And then when he starts asking everybody else, he just keeps working down until he finds somebody who basically agrees with him. Did you catch him, verse 7? When the older men, their advice, if you will be a servant to them, if you will serve them. Apparently, that didn't sit very well with him. He's got the idea, I'm the king. They need to serve me. This is Jeroboam's character. This is the type thoughts. This is the type person that leads to a division of God's people. This is what leads to separation between what would become Israel and what would become Judah. I'm not serving. I'm the king. I don't have to serve. Can we get that out? Can we have that going through our mind? Can we ever get to the point where we don't do anything for anybody, but we keep expecting people to do things for us? That's Rehoboam. Sadly, this is his character. When we think about doing character studies, we tend to think about positive character. But God revealed things about others as well. We can learn from some of his weaknesses. Let's make some applications before we keep working down the list. First of all, let's talk more about applications for ourselves, about God's counsel. Things come up in our life all the time. And God's counsel, unlike Rehoboam, we need to be seeking God's counsel. Whatever the issue may be, what we need to be thinking is, has God spoken on this? Because if he has, that's the only counsel we need. That's the beginning and the ending of where we seek the answers to. If God has spoken on it, then we don't need to seek anything else. Real quick, legitimate examples. God has spoken on marriage and divorce and remarriage. And we talked about that just a few weeks ago. One man, one woman for life. God has spoken on that. Don't go seek counsel from Oprah. God has spoken on purity. God has spoken against the sin of fornication and the sin of adultery and the sin of homosexuality. God has spoken. Don't go seek counsel from Hollywood. God has spoken concerning how we are to raise and train and mold our children. God has spoken about discipline our children. Don't go seek counsel from Dr. Spock. There are people we can go and seek answers from, but when God has spoken, let his answers be enough. Wasn't enough for Rehoboam. Never sought God's counsel. When we do have to seek some counsel, because there's some things that God didn't speak on, there are hundreds of questions that will come up in our life that will affect our spiritual welfare that we can't go to just one specific text to find out. Those of you maybe raising children or will raise children one of these days, you're going to have to answer the question, do I homeschool or do I not? Those of you who are working and looking for job opportunities, do I move my family to this place or do I not? You're not going to go to a specific verse and find answers to that. But there are principles that God teaches us. There are general principles that we've got to know how to apply. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. There is counsel to be gotten, and it needs to come from places besides Dear Abby and Francis Chan. And unlike Solomon, sometimes the answers are not going to be all that easy for us to hear. But we be willing to accept those things that we don't want to hear. 2 Timothy chapter 4. We compared this to the commission Jeremiah had been given. We studied Jeremiah on Wednesday night. Remember, he was tear down and build up, root out and plant. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Preach the word, be instant in season and out of season. Reprove and rebuke. There's your tearing down and pulling down, your rooting out. Reprove and rebuke. Exhort. There's your building up. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. But after their own lust, they will heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. That's not... Paul's not writing by inspiration to Timothy about Rehoboam. But can you see that? Can you see him? See him just scratching his ears. What do you think I should do? Oh, what do you think I should do? And he just keeps hunting until he gets exactly what he wants. Me and you will find ourselves a loophole if we're looking for one long enough. You're going to find somebody somewhere to ease our conscience. How much grief and how much regret could have been avoided if we just chosen better counsel. Applications me and you can make about this. Look in Matthew chapter 20. We talked about his refusal to serve. If you'll just be a servant to them. Yeah, but I don't have to be a servant to them. They have to serve me. I'm the king. Matthew chapter 20. Around 1,000 years later, Jesus still dealing with that same concept, and he's talking to his disciples about it. You know how many times the disciples had these arguments about among themselves. Who's going to be the greatest? You remember James and John got their own mother to go kind of grease the wheels so that Jesus would let them take the right and left-hand seats. Jesus' inner circle dealing with the idea of, I'm going to be served one of these days. Because you love me so much. Because I'm with you. And one of these days, I'm going to have a position of authority. People's going to serve me. He's trying to get that out of their mind. Matthew chapter 20. Look in verse 25. Jesus called them together. And he said, you know the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them. And they that are great exercise authority upon them. Verse 25, he says, you know this. Well, we know it too. We know earthly leaders can be full of themselves. We see it almost every day when we pick up the news. We know that people can elevate to a position where humility is just not there. And we know people who take advantage of that. They exercise dominion. They have great authority and they love every second of it. Verse 26. But this will not be so among you. Whoever will be great among you, let him be your servant. Verse 25, whoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Interesting thing about that. Go do some research about it. That second use of servant there, the old King James in verse 26 uses minister and servant in verse 27. The newer translations in verse 26 uses the word servant. And in verse 27, some of them use the word slave. So it's, these verses, it's kind of upping the ante a little bit. It's increasing it. In verse 28, even so the Son of Man came not to be ministered to, not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Jesus was characterized by his service. That's what we think about. It's hard to us to even, we're just sitting down in a quiet time thinking for ourselves, and you think back through the life of Christ. Some of the main events that's going to cross our mind are going to be events of service. Times when he did something. There's a bunch of somethings. But if me and you go to a quiet corner today and start thinking about Jesus, our mind is going to get us on something that he did for somebody else. Characterized his life. And he's wanting it to characterize the life of his people. And Rehoboam didn't get that. Turn back to 1 Kings chapter 14. When you look through these character traits, I'm going to show you something else that happened. Another mistake of Rehoboam, another trait of Rehoboam. We saw him take some inferior counsel. Well, that's a character flaw. That wasn't a one-time thing. Substituting inferior things, it's just a running thing through his life. Let me show you an example in chapter 14 of 1 Kings. In verse 25, pick up with me there. In the fifth year of his reign, so this is well after what we read of earlier. This is 5 years down the line, but he hadn't changed a bit. 1 Kings 14, verse 25, it came to pass in the fifth year of the king Rehoboam that Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem, and he took away the treasures of the house of the Lord, the treasures of the king's house. He took them all away, and he took away the shields of gold that Solomon had made. God's punishing Judah. Rehoboam has not been a faithful king. Judah has just followed his lead. And as God was wont to do, he punished them by using other nations. He lets Egypt attack them. And Egypt just kind of plunders. They come in and they take this, they take that. They go in and they take all this stuff away. One of them specifically mentioned in verse 26 is shields of gold that Solomon had made. Remember when we studied the United Kingdom, all the things that Solomon did with the gold and all the things that he had made? Apparently there were these shields. What they would have looked at, we don't know. But imagine these shields of gold that apparently Solomon's, some of his, what would be the word? Some of his entourage, some of his soldiers would have carried, leading his parades. As Solomon walking through town or going through on a chariot, there would have been these shields of gold that would have kind of led the way. They get stolen. You know what Rehoboam does? Well, let me back up. You know what Rehoboam doesn't do? He doesn't go get them. He doesn't go back and reclaim what belongs in Jerusalem. Verse 27. King Rehoboam made in their place bronze shields, and he committed them to the hands of the chief guards who kept the door of the king's house. And so it was, when the king went into the house of the Lord, that the guard bore them and brought them back to the guard chamber. Oh, no, he doesn't go get the real. He doesn't go get the pure. He just makes something that's less. He just gets some bronze ones. And now when he walks through town, you got those bronze ones that he's following. And from a distance, probably a lot of people never even knew that. Unless you're some kind of eagle eye. From a distance, in the sun, it probably would have looked just the same. Sun still reflecting off. It still would have probably been an impressive sight. But it was an inferior thing. Can we make an application about that? There's a lot of substituting going on in the religious world today. We're going to talk more about that in the next hour, Lord willing. Replacing what's valuable with something that's less. That's a step toward the death of the local church. When we start substituting God's plan for something less, anything less, when we start taking gold and replacing it with bronze because it's a little close, and from a distance it's not all that much of a... When we start doing that, we start substituting what God's given us as pure, we're not any better than Rehoboam. How's this all end up? Look in 2 Chronicles 12. Let's get to the end of it. The end of his reign. How does it all play out in real life? 2 Chronicles 12. Here's the end of Rehoboam. 2 Chronicles 12, verse 1. It came to pass that when Rehoboam had established the kingdom and he strengthened himself, he forsook the law of the Lord and all of Israel with him. 2 Chronicles 12, verse 1. Once he got everything in order, once he kind of got established, he just went his own way. Forsook the law of the Lord, and Israel went with him. Drop down in 2 Chronicles verse 14 now. 2 Chronicles 12, 14. He, talking about Rehoboam, he did evil because he prepared not his heart to seek the Lord. We've looked at his character flaws. We've looked at some of his issues. When you're not seeking God's counsel, and when you don't recognize good counsel from evil counsel, and when you don't understand one thing in this world about serving and helping others, and when you don't know the difference between superior and inferior, yeah, here's where you end up. And we're going to end up in the same place if we're no better than him. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Let's make an application to ourselves as we end the study. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Rehoboam had some advice. He had some counsel given to him, and he rejected good counsel. Well, let's take some counsel. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. In verse 1, we then as workers together with him beseech you, implore you, we're begging you, that you do not receive the grace of God in vain. Verse 2, look at that last phrase. Now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. That's counsel from God. This is advice, not from older men, not from younger men. It's not even from Paul himself. This is spirit-driven counsel. Verse 1, grace has been extended. Don't take it in vain. Don't let that be empty. Verse 2, today is the time. Today's the accepted time. Today's the day of salvation. Stop putting off what we know. Stop putting off what we need. Stop putting off what we know we ought to be doing. Get your songbooks out. Take advantage of the counsel that the Spirit gave to us. We saw some character flaws of Rehoboam. Let's make sure that we don't have them in our life. And if we do, it's called repenting. Let's make sure we take advantage of this time, this accepted time of salvation that we've got right now. Take advantage of it while we stand and sing.